Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:53 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is November 27th, and I saw this graphic pop up on Twitter over the weekend, and it reminded me of attending the very first chart seminar I went to when I started working with David back in 2003, because he always started off the chart seminar with this graphic, and it was just a normal day at the nation's most important financial institution, and it offers a graphic illustration of how bull markets can evolve from nothing to mania and back again. And this is a topic of conversation that has been revolving around Bitcoin for much of the last few months. And I saw this graphic as well today, and it was overlaying all the different bull markets or manias that we've had over the last couple of hundred years, and comparing Bitcoin in many respects, at least on this chart, to the tulip mania in the 1600s. The price of the, or the pace of the advance is accelerating higher. There's absolutely no question of that, but the reality is that accelerations are part of the consistency characteristics of this market. In fact, that is why people are in the Bitcoin market, is because it accelerates higher. And I think it is worth looking at this chart and really beginning to understand who is buying this thing, because we've just come back from the Thanksgiving Day holiday. There were obviously a lot of young people convincing their senior or the senior members of their families to get into it, and Coinbase has had 300,000 new accounts opened over the holiday weekend. So Bitcoin has surged higher, up $1,300 today. Now, when we look at the chart, it's also worth considering that these are all cash deposits coming in. This is not futures or options-led investment, but rather pure cash investing. It means it's unleveraged, and therefore the people who are investing, they're not particularly interested in how many points it has advanced, but rather what the percentage advance is, and therefore a log scale chart is most appropriate. And particularly when we look at the log scale chart, we're given a really rather good example of a consistent trend. One thing that we can notice, though, from this trend is that the length of time that Bitcoin is going sideways is contracting, but rather that we still have this staircase step sequence uptrend. The price paused initially at 1,000. Then it paused around $1,200 or just under $1,300. Then it paused at $3,000. It paused at $5,000. It paused at $6,000. And then it paused at $8,000. And now we are testing the 10,000 point level. Now, there's no evidence just yet that this advance has run out of steam. Although, obviously, there are going to be a lot of people looking at that psychological 10,000 level and thinking, well, what next? So it is not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we get some pause of consolidation. But the most important thing about Bitcoin is its three primary consistency characteristics. The first is that it is prone to accelerations on the upside. This was exactly the same reason that people were getting into gold and silver during its bull market, that they were prone to these accelerations on the upside. So that's one thing. As long as Bitcoin is surging on the upside, people are going to be more than happy. The second is that it is prone to very sharp and pullbacks, and some of those pullbacks can be even sharper than the breakouts that preceded them. And the third is that it generally finds support in the region of the upper side of the underlying range, and the most recent high of an underlying range is about 8,000. So it could pull back by $1,500 and still be in a consistent advance. And that is, in fact, what we would expect to happen, that the low of the next pullback should be somewhere around $8,000, considering that very sharp pullbacks is one of the consistency characteristics of this advance. Now, outside of what we see with Bitcoin, it was a reasonably quiet day on stock markets, with the S&P 500 and the Dow relatively unchanged, and European markets a little bit in the negative in negative territory, but not in a dynamic fashion by any means. And this remains a generally benign environment. We have continued to see this distinct lack of volatility, which is, I think, lending an additional tailwind to what we see in the stock markets, that with most of the evidence for a lot of speculation in the cryptocurrency markets, we don't see a great deal of evidence that there is the same degree of enthusiasm for stocks, rather that we are in a pretty consistent advance. But that doesn't mean that the pace of the advance can't pick up. Eventually, people will start to get the message that things are fine, that a lot of the reasons that people are not investing have not come to fruition, and that the potential is that this market could accelerate on the upside. And considering that we are still in a period of synchronized global economic expansion, that central banks are beginning to angle towards removing some of the accommodation that they have added into the system, but that they have not yet actually done so, with the Fed being the one that is closest to the exit sign, and that it is already just beginning to reduce the size of its balance sheet, but not yet do we see the same thing from any of the other central banks. So that And then we also have the fact that the volatility index is still really quite low, and that there is a clear downward bias to the vol over more than well, almost 2 years at this stage. And as long as that remains the case, then the likelihood is that the advance, such as it is on Wall Street, is likely to persist. And the Wall Street leash effect is having a wider impact on just about everything else. This is one of the most broadly based global stock market rallies we've seen in really quite some time, and not least because we are in a period of synchronized global economic expansion. It's been a really long time, over a decade, since we've been able to claim that with any confidence. The Nikkei today was in a mildly negative territory, and it has paused here around the 22,000 level. What I continue to keep a close eye on is the second section index, because it has been such a reliable lead indicator for the market over the last few years, and it is pausing below this 7,000 level. And considering that it paused at 5 and then at 6 and now at 7,000, this is not overly, I think, taxing for the integrity of the medium-term bull market, but it does look like we're going to get some pause additionally in here. And the yen is another key arbiter, and it is back around 111.5. It's in the region of the trend mean, but by far the more important point is that it has been largely range-bound for most of this year. And when we look at it on that basis, the trend mean doesn't really mean an awful lot, because in a rangy environment, a trend smoothing device will just simply tell you that the price is going sideways. The 115 level is by far the most important here. If the dollar can sustain a move above it, then we are back in a position of a demand dominance. But there isn't a great deal of evidence for that just yet. And when we look at the dollar index, we can see that it did unwind its oversold condition relative to the trend mean, and it has been pulling back over the last 3 weeks. So this confirms supply dominance in the region of the trend mean, and it really questions whether that was a failed downside break below the 92 level, but rather is this nothing other than some distribution in the context of a wider bear market environment. If it is indeed the case that the dollar is going to move lower, well, that should be positive for gold. And gold is flirting with the $1,300 area. And considering that it has represented an area of resistance since at least at the beginning of October, its ability to sustain a move above that level is going to be rather key. And I suspect that the chances are that it will be able to sustain a move above $1,300. And platinum prices continue to bounce from the lower side of what is a year-long range. So even in an environment where it lacks a medium-term bullish catalyst, the likelihood is that it will at least go back up and test that $1,000 level. And I suspect that we can draw similar conclusions for silver, where it has been largely range-bound for the better part of a year already. When we look at the commodity complex, what we're seeing increasingly is that the industrial metals are returning to positions of relative performance. It was a reasonably quiet day in the industrial metals today, but when we look at it on the weekly basis, copper rallied pretty impressively last week, and it continues to hold this progression of higher reaction lows, and I think that this is still a recovery trajectory. But what I think is increasingly interesting is in the agriculturals and in the meat products. So, for example, feeder cattle has first step above the base characteristics. It is bouncing from the region of the trend mean, and it did rally rather impressively at the beginning of the year and has spent most of its time since April ranging below 160. But if it continues to hold the 150 area, then I think that we can draw the conclusion that this is a first step above the type 2 bottom. And cotton prices, which had really trended lower for a good part of the year, are now back testing the region of the trend mean. We're seeing increasing evidence of firming around that 67-cent level, and that 67-cent area also represents the upper side of that base that we saw back in 2015 through the beginning of 2016. So I think cotton is beginning to look a little bit more interesting as well. So far, we have pretty much a dearth of evidence that there's very much bullish activity going on in the grains and beans. Corn has been pretty moribund, and so has soybeans. And soybeans is back testing the 1,000-cent level. It really does need to sustain a move above that area to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment and that the almost 3-year base formation will be completed. So we are seeing tentative evidence on an individual basis that some of the commodities are beginning to regain some bullish interest, and sugar is taking its lead from the oil price. And oil today sold off early on in the day, but was able to recoup the majority of its decline and is still trading around the $63-$64 area on Brent. But more importantly than that, it is holding the breakout above $60. We're starting to see, and obviously OPEC has got a big meeting this week in Vienna, and we know what they're going to be talking about, that they've been reducing their supply and trying to be really quite disciplined for much of the last few years, and they are finally beginning to get the rally in oil prices that they had hoped for 18 months ago. And how big is their appetite going to be to continue to reduce their supply? Because we know that a great deal of unconventional supply, and then not simply the unconventional supply in on the domestic US market, but then also the deep water supply that we have in Brazil or offshore in West Africa or in the Gulf of Mexico or the tar sands in Canada. They all become progressively more economic the higher prices go, and that's going to represent a headwind eventually. But as long as OPEC remains really quite disciplined and we're in a period of synchronized global economic expansion and we continue to have these geopolitical tensions between Saudi Arabia and Iran, then there is the potential for prices to move higher. That does not mean that we're back in a secular bull market for oil prices, but it does suggest that we are going to be in a more volatile environment for the foreseeable future. And considering that if we really do think that this is going to be a choppy, rangy environment for oil, well, The likelihood is that the upper side of the range is somewhere around $100, and the lower side of the range is probably around 40. So we are currently rallying from the lower side, and there is the potential for some additional upside here before all of those negative factors begin to really play a role as some of that additional higher cost supply comes back onto the market. But it does take a few months for that to occur, and in that period, oil prices can rally. Then, when we turn our eyes to the bond markets, what I think is one of the more important points is that the yield curve is flattening, and that 2-year yields have been breaking out. So the bond market is beginning to price in the potential for at least one more rate hike next year after the one that we that has already been priced in for December. And that is going to have an effect on the high yield market at some stage. The high yield spreads have not yet widened, but they're not contracting either. And this represents what looks like a pause at the very minimum. And when we look at it just on the daily basis, we can see that it has been really quite choppy for most of this year, and it is pulling back from the upper side of the range. And what that suggests is that there's no panic imminently. We know that this is a lead indicator for future difficulties in the market and potentially recessions. It's at least a necessary condition for a recession, but that doesn't mean that it is the most reliable of lead indicators for recessions. What we do know is that when high yield spreads are trending higher, it does contribute to difficulties in stock markets, and we saw plenty of evidence for that back in the 2015 and 2016 periods. So, when we take a step back and we look at everything that's occurring, we're still in a pretty benign environment. There is a distinct lack of volatility in stock markets, and we know what the contributing factors are for that. And we know what the end is likely to represent, but that's unlikely to occur this year. And in fact, as we exit the Thanksgiving Day holiday, we are moving more into one of the more seasonally attractive periods of the year associated with the Santa Claus rally, where markets generally tend to rally into the end of the year. So that would suggest that any real issues that people might have, or any real problems that people are fearful of, are unlikely to manifest themselves this year. And there is the potential that we're going to get some real news about what the shape of US tax cuts are going to be by the end of the year. And that will, I think, shape a lot of perceptions about what we can expect for next year. And in the meantime, I'll wish all the best to all of you.